about my own children. So,
I can sort of start
that as we talk. So that's no problem.
No problem. All right, we're going to start.
Great.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
I can hear you in one side.
I know.
This is Therapist Kelly.
Today.
This is so funny. I feel like, you know, when you go underwater and it's like one ear is clogged. That's how I feel. And I thought it was just me. And then you were making the motion ear. Like, it's really funny.
Anyway, hello. Welcome, everybody, back to our show. How are you, my dear Kelly?
Things are good, actually. Really good. I did a presentation on stress and coping
for you.
Westfield Mall employees. So that was really exciting.
How did that go?
It went really well. I was really nervous. So it was good. I mean, it wasn't a huge turnout, but it was still really great. And it was just a lot of fun. And it was really interesting for me to see how much stress people have outside of work. Like, I really thought a lot of people had stress mostly around work, but all the questions at the end were kind of more personal stuff.
Well, one, you should know, right?
Absolutely. the job is the easy part for me, but I was surprised to hear that. So, it was really good. And then David and I went to Huntington Beach this weekend, got a little R&R, and it was just incredible.
An overnight?
One overnight, praise the Lord.
Oh, you love that. That's so cool.
My God, it's like essential. I'm so glad
that you and David do that. You really do. You are the role model for many couples with younger children who, you know, you have to set that time aside. That's awesome.
I just feel like it's no longer a luxury. It's a necessity, I feel like, for us. I mean, I think especially with young kids, you become this like business partnership and you need to bring it back to that romance. So it was a really nice weekend.
I will not ask for the details, but we'll just assume you had a good time.
We had a great time. What about you?
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to this weekend is coming up as we're celebrating Christopher's big milestone birthday.
Yes.
He started his new job this week, and then we're going up to Lake Arrowhead this weekend, and his daughter and her puppy are coming. And we have a nice cabin that we have lake privileges and kayaking and on the lake and hiking and all that stuff. So I'm really looking forward
to a
couple days of R&R. And he's excited because apparently many of his milestone birthdays have gotten trumped by other things. So I'm actually making extra effort and making him a party. And
that's so nice.
Weekend and stuff, so he feels special.
I feel special for him. It sounds great. That would be my perfect weekend, too.
This morning was interesting, though, because our neighbor is doing another part of the fence that we have that we shared.
Yeah.
And we had the whole fence done, and we shared that expense and such. And then she wanted to have some extra done. Well, the contractor misunderstood, and he took down our whole side of our gate and fence on the side and cut off our beautiful flowers that were there. So, like, I got home yesterday, and then they're fixing it today. But it's Where's our flowers? These were so pretty. I don't know if they're like jasmine or whatever. They smell so beautiful.
And they just chopped them down.
They're just gone. And the whole side gate. And then how to understand and really appreciate the modern conveniences of life. So they had to turn our water off because they broke a pipe to the main line. So I'm like, this morning, I'm like turning on to wash dishes from last night.
And you're like,
there's no water. You can't flush the toilet. It's like, I can really grow to appreciate how much we rely on modern conveniences.
It's so true. Amazing. Wow. You went Amish for the day.
I did. I was looking for my well. Where's the well of water, right? We had those big, 1 gallon jugs. So
exactly.
Trying to wash dishes like that. It's like, what the hell? Just leave it till later. So, good week. Fun stuff coming up. And, so let's just dive into it. Last week's guest. He was great. Dr. Matthew Torrington, in case you missed that show. He's an addiction specialist. He really, I think, did a great job of helping us understand how the brain actually is affected by addiction. And I loved his explanation.
His analogies were beautiful.
Beautiful.
Like, I just feel like you could tell he was a very visual thinker. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that so much because I could completely understand what he was saying, because I guess I think that same way. So it was easy to remember. I really liked him, too. So it was a great show if you missed that one.
And a very noted doctor. And so if you did miss that, check that one out. Matthew Torrington, an addiction specialist. And he covered a lot of good things, opiates and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Very informative. Okay, I will allow you to do the introductions for today's guests.
So I'm really, really, really excited about the guests today. We have the authors of the book, I Have a Question About Death, a book for children with autism spectrum disorder or other special needs. And I know one of the authors personally, and I was so excited because I really feel like not only is this a very difficult topic to broach with any kid, but I think in particular those with special needs. And I just want to say my older son loved it. And wonderful. I was telling Dr. Deborah how much, he's a tough one. So if you can get past him, then, you know, you're doing really well. So I'm really excited to introduce them. So Arlen Grad Gaines is an MSW, LCSW, ACHP, SW, and a licensed clinical social worker with an advanced certification in hospice and palliative social work. She received a Master's of Social Work from the University of Maryland with a specialization in aging. She has worked at the Jewish Social Service Agency Hospice in Rockville, Maryland since 2008 and has developed a specialization in supporting families who have children with special needs around death and dying. She lives in Bethesda, Maryland, with her husband and two children, ages 14 and 10. And Meredith actually knows my husband also, which is so cool. Meredith Englander-Polsky is also an MSW, LCSW, and she's been working at the intersection of social work and special ed for more than 15 years. She has a proven track record of recognizing an unmet need and creating a successful solution. She founded, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Matten, www.mattenkids.org in the year 2000, recognizing a significant gap in the Jewish community's ability to include children with special needs and their families. She lives in Gaithersburg, Maryland, with her husband and three children, ages 12, 10, and 8.
Welcome, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. We're so happy to be on your show.
Beautiful. Oh, my gosh. So what? Tell us more, a little bit more about your background and what inspired this book.
Absolutely. Well, for me, this is Arlen talking. I started my career as a professional ballet dancer, actually.
Wow.
And I was convinced, I would be a physical therapist after that. And I was well on my way. But like many of us, things happen in unexpected ways. And we actually talk about that in our book. Things are not always what we expect. And about 20 years ago, my father died, and it really just changed my life. I was so moved by the experience of having hospice care, and it just hit me in some way, and I just felt like in some way this will be part of my life. Mm. And I started moving towards social work and worked for many years with older adults, and finally after I obtained my Master of Social Work, I went right into hospice care, and I've been a hospice social worker now for about 10 years, and I just would have never imagined I feel so grateful to be able to do this work and work with so many different patients and families. And it just teaches me so much about living. I feel really lucky to do this kind of work.
That's awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah. And how about you, Meredith?
And for me, this is Meredith. So I never really expected that I would write a book about death. I took a little bit of a different path. After college, I started meeting a lot of kids and families, like you were saying, Kelly, in your introduction of me, who weren't being included in Jewish educational settings. And I really wanted to figure out a way to change that paradigm. And I decided, sort of on a whim, that the skills I needed to do that were in clinical social work and special education. So I pursued two master's degrees in those fields. And then, like you said, you were very close on your pronunciation. I found it Matten.
Oh, Matten. Okay, sorry about
like
that.
A
no, you were close. You almost got it. I found it Matten and really, you know, have been working in that world for the past, you know, almost 20 years, about 17 years. And through a long, convoluted path, I actually met Arlen's husband, Brian, first, and then Arlen and I became friends. And she approached me she had this idea about 5 or 6 years ago that children with special needs really needed a book about death that was specifically geared towards them. And we can talk a little bit later about why that was. And so it was really, you know, sort of her brainchild. But ultimately, she came to me and said, you know, I think I really need a special educator to really understand, you know, how kids think and how this can be really specially tailored for kids with special needs. So there came our project together.
I just love this book. I absolutely love it. And like I said in the intro,
my
older son loved it. I mean, I think it's just so simple. And I feel like, I mean, my son, he's got ADHD and he's just very inquisitive. I mean, so many questions. I mean, it's really funny because we totally on a side note, but we have a friend who a lesbian couple, and he's been asking the mom, like, okay, so you're the birth mom, but like, who's the donor? And it's like, literally, like, he's so inquisitive about everything, like almost to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But like, I just feel like your answers are so simple and concise, and he like completely got it. And I absolutely really think this book is fantastic. And I really agree that there's such a need for this.
Yes, it's adorable. And I'm really curious then, tell us and our audience, please, about what makes this different in terms of a book for children with autism or special needs as opposed to those who don't have those?
Well, you know, it's such a good question. And, you know, when I was doing my work as a hospice social worker all these years, I was noticing that many of the adult children of my patients had a child at home with special needs, and many of them were trying to use some of the traditional books with these children. But what we found is that many books for children on many complicated topics often use metaphors, or they use animals as the main person in the book. So you think about for children who have special needs, many of them are very concrete thinkers.
Got it.
So when you're sharing with them books about dinosaurs or books about leaves falling from trees, beautiful books that may work for many children, oftentimes for those who are very concrete thinkers, these are just not a good fit. So
that makes sense.
That was, exactly. So when I did a lot of research over the years, and I found that there was actually nothing written for children, especially children with special needs, in a very concrete manner that approached the subject through that lens. And I approached Meredith, as she had mentioned, to work on this book together. And what we tried to do is figure out, how do we answer questions that do have a concrete answer in a concrete way? And how do we acknowledge many of the very difficult questions around death and dying that don't have a concrete answer? And how do we approach that in this book? And that's what we set out to do. And part of it is acknowledging that some questions just don't have a concrete answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I loved about it, too, because I think a lot of these books about death, there's a big religious component, depending on what you believe. And I think, yeah, that's really tough, too. And I loved how just simple your answers were. I mean, it was like, you know, it doesn't matter about the religion. It's just this is the basic answer to the question. I really love that.
Yeah. And we really made a concerted effort, a conscious decision to take religion out of it, mm-hmm. To appeal, first of all, to the most number of people that we could. You know, obviously we couldn't address every religion's take on death and afterlife and anything else. But really providing families with an opportunity to have those discussions, you know, if that's their tradition, and to leave it open like that. And I think another thing, you know, in addition to what Arlen was talking about, what makes this book unique in terms of, you know, being geared towards kids with special needs, is that it also incorporates sensory-based challenges into the experience of coping with the death of a loved one. And these are things that, you know, many people might not think about, but if you consider a child with autism or even ADHD or sensory processing issues or any number of other things, you know, think about it from their perspective. Their house may be full of people. People might be trying to constantly hug them. People around them might be crying. Some people might be laughing, you know, and helping children understand that those things are going to happen, and what they can do to sort of, you know, take care of themselves, make themselves comfortable in the face of things that really tend to make them uncomfortable.
It's so amazing because just as you were speaking, I had come up to page 22 and just about talking about the hugging. I was right, yes. like right there, and I wanted to read that paragraph because I think it's so important. And even if somebody doesn't have special needs, just a sensitive child. Yes. I mean, yes. lots of children are just very sensitive, and I just love this. It just puts it in perspective under the concept of when someone dies, what does it feel like for people who are still alive? And you write, I find out that sometimes there are a lot of people around after someone has died. It can feel noisy, and people might try to hug me a lot. I don't have to ask about any of that. I see it for myself. Now I know it's okay for me to take a break or go to a quiet space and come back when I feel ready. Mm. How so empowering for
yes,
a child.
Yes,
that just really stood out for me. I love that. It's so beautifully written.
It's so true. Yeah, and also it's like I think a lot of people who are grieving, it's like they want to feel like they're helping. And sometimes it's like, if you're that kid, like you just need that space, you know? And I just, it's almost like, yeah, it's like you're giving them permission to take that
yeah.
time to themselves.
And I think for parents and caregivers who are reading the book with their child, I think it's a reminder that even in the face of this big thing that maybe they haven't experienced before, there are strategies that they've used for other challenging things in life that they can apply to this as well.
Absolutely. You know, I want to say something that just reminds me of this concept of be nice, you know, how we teach our yes. children to be nice. And I'm very interested mm-hmm. in words. The word nice actually means pretending not to know. So when we tell a child to be nice, we're actually asking them to go into denial. And what I love about this book is that it's actually encouraging you to set your own boundaries, understand mm-hmm. things, process it in your way, in your time.
Yes.
And that's just really, it's really cool.
One of the other things, thank you so much. And, you know, one of the other things we did in this book is we purposefully didn't name the type of loss it is. So we wrote this book for people who have maybe lost a grandparent, for people who've lost a parent, for people who have lost a sibling. Mm-hmm. So whatever the loss is, we wanted it to work. So we didn't make it, in other words, specific to a certain type of loss. Because again, for some children who are concrete thinkers, it's difficult to extrapolate and try to
sure.
Read a book about loss of a grandmother
right.
when they're really talking about the loss of their father.
Yes.
So we tried to make it as open and inclusive as possible.
Smart.
And other differences than just the concrete thinking that you find with special needs kids and how they do the grieving process?
So, you know, often we try... With all kids, every child processes things in different ways. And so what we try to do is be sensitive to the specific types of ways that each child processes information. And I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I was working with a family who had a child, I'd say maybe 8 or 9, the boy, and he was very mathematically oriented. So his way of processing the world was through mathematical concepts. And as he was going through the loss of his grandfather, the family they were really smart, and they used mathematical concepts to help him process actually and anticipate the loss. This is someone we were caring for, the person in hospice care, so we could anticipate the loss. Not all losses, you know, we can anticipate like that. Mm-hmm. But what they would do is they would say, you know, Grandpa, his body is getting ready to stop working. His body is at 20% today. And the kid understood that. And then as he was getting closer to dying, they said, today it seems like he's at about 5%. And then when his grandfather died, he said, oh, I understand. He's at 0%. And his family said, yes, he's at 0%.
Wow.
And it wasn't a way to try to be cold about a concept. And, you know, numbers sound like they're more cold. But it was a way of meeting this child right where he was at. And that was how he was able to process this very complicated topic.
That's incredible.
That's awesome.
That is, yeah. I feel like my older son is like that, too. He's very mathematically oriented. I am the complete opposite. I am not a numbers person. But, like, it's so true. I think you have to explain things in terms that they understand. And that they'll relate to. So that's
absolutely, absolutely. And I think also, you know, by creating a book with autism spectrum disorder or other special needs in the title, I think we are bringing attention to the fact that kids with special needs will notice the death of someone just as much and be affected just as much, even if it might not seem like that from the outset, or they might not demonstrate grief in the same way as, you know, they're typically developing peers. It's really important to recognize that they do have feelings of loss. They are affected by it. They do notice all of those things. So I think really putting it out there and making sure that families and caregivers recognize that and know how to sort of adapt their thinking to accommodate that is really important.
The excellent point. And do you see, is there a difference between how autistic children or special needs children process the difference between the death of a person versus a pet?
It's an excellent question. I think there are many similarities, and in fact, loss of a pet is very often the first loss a child will experience. Mm-hmm. So there are not actually a lot of books on loss of a pet, so maybe Meredith has something in our future. but I think what's tricky often about the loss of a pet, especially if it's a dog, is we talk about putting our dogs to sleep. Mm-hmm. And we probably will touch on this later about some of the euphemisms and ways we talk about death, but you know, thinking about how to explain death and dying of a pet to a child also can be complicated, but it's a really important teaching moment. And even if I feel like even if you see a dead bird on the street and you're with your child, that can be a teaching moment and a way to talk about death, and because it's unfortunately an inevitable part of our lives. But I think it's very similar ways that we support children around loss of a pet as well. And it's a very, very significant loss. The loss of a pet often can affect children even more than sometimes loss of a grandparent, for example, because that pet is in their house and with them every day.
Sure. Do you have any suggestions? I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that maybe have dealt with this or are going to deal with this about somebody who is dying or a pet or anything aside from your book, but just maybe some I don't know, I guess some good foundation that we can talk about.
So one of the things that we like to think about is how we use language. And this is for any child, not just children with autism spectrum disorder or other special needs. So think about how we often talk about death. We sometimes use very soft language to try to cushion the subject, thinking that it might make it easier to understand, but in fact, that might make it more confusing. For example, things like, they are in a better place. They are no longer with us, or maybe they live in our hearts, or they're all around us, or they've passed. And many of these things we say, I feel like, have very beautiful connotations, beautiful images, but for children who are concrete thinkers, and many children in general, it can be quite perplexing. So one of the first things that we offer is thinking about how we talk about death and dying. Try to use the word died. Really name it, and try to you know, just really approach it in a very direct manner.
Absolutely.
And I think, I think also preparing children for a range of emotions, and also recognizing and helping them acknowledge that it's okay if they don't feel all of those emotions at, you know, one particular time or another. You know, we help prepare them for the idea that some people might be crying because they miss the person, while others might be laughing, which is really confusing.
Yeah, sure.
But they might be remembering a funny story about the person.
Right.
And also trying to maintain the child's sense of structure and routine, which can be really comforting to a child. So even when, you know, a family might be in the midst of preparing for the, you know, or anticipating the death of somebody in their lives, the more we can help a child maintain structure and routine, the more they're going to feel grounded and like they're going to be taken care of and that things really are going to be okay. It's interesting. I was putting my 10-year-old daughter to bed last night, and it was one of those, like, you know, I tucked her in and I was, Kelly, I know you could imagine this. I was, you know, walking out of her room and she said, "Wait, mommy, I have a question," which is so funny because she must say that 25 times a day. And it never occurred to me that, you know, we called our book, "I Have a Question." But she said, "Mommy, I have a question." I said, "Yeah, what's up?" And she said, "I've been meaning to ask you this ever since even before you wrote the book." She says, Because when someone dies, why do people say they went to a better place? And, you know, so I explained to her, much like Arlen just explained to, you know, the whole audience here, that, that sometimes people try to cushion it and make it sound a little softer. And that's one of the euphemisms. And I had to explain to her what a euphemism was. You know, we went through the whole thing and she said, but what does it mean, you know? And it's like one of those things, like when you put yourself in the perspective of a child with or without special needs and really think about, you know, such a complicated issue such as death, you really start to think of it in very different ways and from a very different perspective. This same child about 5 years ago, when so when she was five, my aunt died, and we talked a lot about it, and, you know, it sort of went on for days having this conversation about, you know, that she died and what that meant and all of these things. And probably a week or so had passed, and I could tell that my daughter was still, like, something was really bothering her. And, you know, finally I said, you know, what are you thinking about? And she said, well, I don't want to die. I said, well, I don't want you to die either, but what, like, what are you really, you know, what's really bothering you? And she said, and you can laugh and it's okay, she said, I don't think I could stay still for that long. You know?
Oh my God.
And it was like, because I hadn't put myself in the shoes of a five-year-old to think about, like, how preposterous this all sounded, you know? And so, you know, she also read the book recently, and I think she also really appreciated, like, just the concrete answers and, you know, the recognition that sometimes there aren't good answers, and that's really hard, too.
Exactly. Absolutely. Sweet. You know, I want to bring this back for a minute about pets, because I was thinking, you know, when you were talking about, like, maybe a grandparent versus a pet, it's interesting because I had no relationship with my grandparents. My parents were both immigrants and and of different religions. My mother Protestant, my father Jewish. His family, those few that survived from the Holocaust, completely shunned my mom, and her family completely shunned my dad. So we didn't have a relationship with our grandparents. But I knew when my grandmother died, I don't even remember when my grandfather died, I think I was eight. And I have no connection or memory to that. But I remember losing my first bunny rabbit like it was just yesterday because I was so attached to that little critter.
Sure.
And so I really appreciate what you were saying, that we shouldn't feel guilty or bad about the level of feelings or the quality or quantity we may have, because it really depends on our connection.
Yes.
And then just this past week, my aunt, who was my father's only living brother's wife, she passed away, and I hadn't had a relationship with her in probably 25 or 30 years, and she wasn't the kindest person on the planet anyway.
Right.
And what I felt mostly was the sadness for my first cousins.
Yeah.
And yet they didn't really feel that sad because it had been 5 years that she's had Alzheimer's. So they processed differently in their real time. So those are just little personal examples. How about you, Kelly? What was your first loss?
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, well, while you were talking, I was thinking also my grandma passed away about, I don't know, three, four years ago. And I remember, like, my older son, so he's seven, so he must have been about four. And I remember he was like, okay, but, like, will we see her again? Like, he couldn't understand that, like, this is it. Like, that idea was just, like, he couldn't process that. And that was so interesting to me. I'd be like, no, she died. And, like, that was just, like, a word to him. It didn't mean anything. So it's just really interesting because you're right. It's like we forget that, you know, we have such context, and they don't. They really don't. This is the first time they're hearing these words, and they don't know what it means.
Right, in that
exactly
concrete.
No, you're absolutely right. And just the idea of the permanence of death. I mean, we sort of take that for granted as adults, but children typically go through different developmental stages in terms of their understanding of that. So kids, you know, maybe preschool years just don't. That understanding of the permanence of death is just not there. And then it might be more sort of elementary, maybe getting toward middle, that they're really understanding that death is final. And for our children with special needs, they really might be learning and processing things even more on their own timetable. So just being sensitive to that. But I think it's a great point that, you know, it's very often the loss of the bunny, you really might have felt much more acutely than the loss of a grandparent. And there's an effect completely expected. The bunny was in your life. And, you know, one of the things we we try to do with whatever type of loss is support children in finding ways to still feel connected to the person who died or even a pet who died. So thinking about, you know, whether it's through pictures or putting together a memory box, finding ways to still share the stories and honor that connection that they had, because it's so important that we don't just never talk about that person again, that we continue to find ways to incorporate those memories in their life.
Are there any signs that a child is not coping well with death, so to speak? And would you see acting out at school, or like what kinds of things could parents, whether special needs or otherwise, look out for to alert them that maybe their child is not handling this in a healthy way?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, we expect with any child that there may be some regression. So I think we can plan for that. And children typically grieve in spurts. So there may be times in which they look just completely fine. Like, what's the problem here? And other times in which we're seeing they're acting out in some way. I think it's just really important to be in communication with all those people who work with your child. So they'll know the baseline, the teachers, the counselors, parents, you'll know what's their typical baseline. So if they're prone to having tantrums, that just might be part of their baseline. But if things are, you know, they just might be a much more intense manner. I think it's just really important to honor that and to really think about how all together they can be supporting the child. But I think we can definitely expect some acting out often. And it's often related to, you know, oftentimes when there's a loss, the parents just might not be as accessible as they normally are. If they are taking care of all of the practical and all the their own emotions in dealing with maybe the loss of their own parent, they just might not have as much time sometimes for the child. So sometimes just not having the parent present as much can be really disconcerting.
Absolutely. That's an excellent point. I think people sometimes they get so preoccupied that they forget that that preoccupation is going to have an impact
absolutely.
On the children.
Sure. And so
exactly. And I think it's all the more reason to try as much as possible to maintain routine, maintain structure. It's so comforting for a child. And we'll talk a little bit about how we use short picture stories as a really effective strategy. But we really try to help children have a sense of control when so much of this feels so out of control.
So if you just tuned in, we are talking with the authors of I Have a Question About Death, a book for children with autism spectrum disorder. And I'm just wondering, so are you gearing this so mostly to kids 5 through 11, it says on the back? Is there a reason particular for that?
That's our general age range, although we've been hearing a lot from early childhood educators and parents of kids in, you know, like pre-K, preschool, mm-hmm. That this is exactly the kind of book that they've been looking for to help explain death, you know, to their younger children. And of course, when you consider individuals with special needs, their chronological age might not represent where they are in terms of being able to process challenging concepts or being able to understand something such as death. So, you know, that's our age range 5 to 11, but we certainly encourage individuals with special needs who are older, who are still, you know, struggling with this concept. I think, you know, most adults still struggle with the concept of death. But, you know, we really think that it can be a useful tool for individuals of many different ages. And I think one really important point also is that although we've targeted the book to individuals with special needs, that I am a really firm believer that special education is just really good education.
Right.
So I really think that this kind of a book is a tool for all different kinds of learners, whether there's a named special need or not, but just a really great
way of talking to children about a complicated issue.
Or adults. I'm loving this. I mean, I know. I'm looking at this. These are just perfect answers for me.
we usually don't like gloat. We really, we love this book. Yes. I mean,
thank you.
And you both are so brilliant and bright, and you speak so well, articulate, and I feel like it really reflects in the book as well. So, gosh.
Thank you so much.
I was thinking too, for what we're hearing too, that obviously we wrote this book for children, but we're hearing that adults are finding it really helpful because it models language to use with children.
Yes.
We, in the back of the book, we have specific suggestions for parents and caregivers. So we do have a little section for them, but I'm hearing, Meredith too, just a lot of feedback around, you know, thank you for modeling how to talk about this. And I think people are using it as an example.
That's, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the simple solutions are usually the best.
I just want to also mention, speaking about the modeling of language, I think the modeling of images is also really important. And we actually have a partnership with an organization called Symbol Sticks. Their website is N as in Nancy, 2Y.org. And it's a really vast library of images that are all created sort of in the same way as these images that are in the book that I know you two are looking at now, probably not the rest of your audience. But we really love it because it doesn't, they're not images that play anything down or that baby anyone or anything. Mm-hmm. They're actually pretty sophisticated images that lots of people of lots of different ages and abilities can relate to. They're also not gender specific. They're not even really race specific. So that, you know, our goal was that any person reading this book could see themselves in this character. The character is never named. It's very much from the perspective of whoever the child is who's reading the book. And Symbol Sticks, like I was saying, has this vast library, and families and educators can actually subscribe to that to be able to have access to thousands of images if they're interested in, you know, helping their child through something else that's going on in their life, or they're, you know, booking to make them a short picture story about something other than the death of a loved one. That can also be a really great tool. And, you know, even without those images, parents should feel really empowered that, you know, you don't have to be an author to be able to make something really simple for your kid. You can use images off of your iPhone, or you can draw your own stick figures. You know, kids are pretty forgiving in that way. And those visuals can be a really, really excellent tool to help children process information and take ownership of next steps.
Yeah, it's kind of delivers exactly what you want for a child to be able to project what their true experience is, not something that you're presenting to them. It's kind of like a good Rorschach.
Yes,
Rorschach
exactly.
A-plot test, right? Yeah. Projection. You can project onto these stick figures really anything yes. about yourself, which is simple yes. and wonderful.
And I have a question, no pun intended. Do you plan on doing other topics? Like, I have a question about whatever other topic.
So we are definitely hoping to have a series of other complicated topics for children with special needs that we feel like will work for all children. We would love to invite your listeners to come to our website because we have a place on the Contact Us section where we are welcoming ideas for books for future series, other topics that are complicated that might be good for this. And our website's ihaveaquestionbook.com.
I love it. I have a question about pregnancy. I think that is so important. You know, the only child then sees mama's belly growing and freaks out. Yes. It doesn't understand. It's like, what the hell is that going to turn out to be?
Yes.
The alien from hell. Right?
Good point.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent Very important topic.
I'm all for you with the series. I mean, really, it's so funny because my husband looked at the book and said, oh my gosh. And he got it right away. He said, oh, they're probably going to do a series. Like the way, I guess, he saw the format of the book. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, I guess so. So I'm really pushing for it. And I do hope our listeners can give you some feedback around that, because I think you're right. It's like, what do the people need? You know, what are they struggling with? And that'll be direct feedback for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, you know, it's important for us to say that, yes, we have very strong backgrounds in social work and in special education, but the book really became a reality because of our conversations with parents and with kids who have been through this. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, almost every question in the book we can attribute to a particular interview we did, a particular conversation we had. And so, you know, I think that's what helped, you know, all these people really helped us to make it, you know, really accessible to our target audience and really helped us understand what the real challenges were when they experienced it in real time. And so, you know, it's really all the more so why we want to hear from people. You know, we have a guess and we've been starting to do some research about what those challenging topics are. But of course, we want it to resonate, you know, with people who are really searching for this kind of resource and haven't yet found it.
Sure.
Awesome. Yeah. And the book was actually just published this year, right? In 2017?
Yep. It came out in March. And there's been a really positive reception. It's available on Amazon and through all major booksellers. So, yeah, we've just been really blown away by the support. And it's just been so interesting. So many people have said, well, this is really a book we need for all kids. And,
yes.
And that's kind of what we are feeling, too. So
it's always beautiful feedback.
I think we hope to continue with that.
Isn't that beautiful feedback when you actually have mastered appealing to a much larger audience than you actually anticipated?
Yeah, I mean, for us, honestly, we were so happy just to have the book in our hand after all that time. For a while, we're like, well, does it really exist? Is it really going to happen? Uh-huh. So getting the book in the mail was really exciting. And then, yeah, you know, recognizing, you know, we knew that there was nothing like it out there, which is why we were trying to fill this gap. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it's been incredibly gratifying to hear from people like this is actually what they were looking for.
That's awesome. Why don't you spend the last few minutes that we have with you telling us some of the things that maybe we haven't asked you that you think would be really important for our listeners to understand?
Well, I think one thing that we do in this book is we have three components, and we haven't really seen a book exactly like this before. We have our story, and we have really walking through the change in life and change in routine when someone dies, and we have the book with pictures and simple words, and we tell the story. Then we retell the entire story with just a word or two and mostly pictures. And we do this for children who learn better through more visual cues or perhaps want to reread the book themselves. Mm-hmm. And we're getting a lot of positive feedback about that version of it, that kids are really liking to read it themselves with sort of following along in the picture story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a social worker, I'm always thinking about ways to support people based on their strengths. And we know children with special needs are highly visual and process information often best in that manner. So that short picture story can tap into that strength and really support them along those lines.
I love that. I absolutely love that too.
It's really wonderful how you did that. Like the first component of the book is much more detailed, and then the mm-hmm. second part is the short picture story. I have a question about death, and it's so simple. And I really want listeners to understand that a lot of people these days, they don't read. They don't like to read and mm-hmm. don't want to read, and if it's not a four-line Twitter, they're not going to read. So anybody who's like a little bit opposed to reading, this one is easy.
Yeah, exactly. Simple. Very similar. Right. Yeah.
This is not a challenge. This is very readable and makes so much sense. Like every word mm-hmm. that you say is mm-hmm. poignant and makes great practical sense.
Yeah. And then I have another question.
I think
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that, though we use as we mentioned earlier, sort of don't directly address religious beliefs, we really want to recognize and validate that for many people and many families, that's a very important component to the experience of death and loss. And what we do in the book is we have some openings around how different families believe different things and different cultures believe different things. So we're trying to provide an opening so that if in your family there's something that's really important to you, that you have a way to incorporate that in the talk that you have with your child. So we certainly don't want to eliminate religious, spiritual, cultural beliefs. That's an incredibly important part of our lives. But we sort of allow you to have the opening that works best for you through this book.
Sure.
Yeah, which is great.
And do you recommend, is it really for parents of kids, or do you recommend that teachers can also read it to students?
Yeah, so we're really recommending it to anybody who's involved in the life of a child. So parents, caregivers, teachers, therapists. We've heard from developmental pediatricians. We've heard from psychiatrists and psychologists and hospice social workers and general pediatricians. Really, it has really run the gamut of, all of these people who, interact with kids and, are responsible for a child's well-being, throughout all the different areas of their life. So, we've even heard from speech and language pathologists and occupational therapists. A lot of kids with special needs are lucky enough to have a team behind them, rooting for them, working with them, helping them to be as successful as they can be. So, we really hope that it will be and is a resource for lots of different people. And sort of most importantly to us is that it reaches families in one way or another who are going through a really difficult time. And we hope that all of those professionals, who hear about the book help get this resource into the hands of the family who needs it the most.
Yes. Yeah. This is a little bit off topic, but I'm curious if everybody has ever commented or asked you about when, let's say, one of the parents disappears, so to speak, like abandonment, like a parent gets divorced and the dad ends up moving out of the country or moving somewhere else and the child doesn't have that. Do you use any of the same concepts with abandonment, so to speak, as you do with actual death?
Absolutely. There are so many types of loss. The types you mentioned, even think about a friend who's a good friend who's moving to another state, a teacher who has to go on maternity leave and is no longer there in the school. All of the types of loss that we deal with in our lives day to day that are not just death. And yes, we would use many of these same concepts, talking about it directly, thinking about the language you use, really, just meeting them where they're at and finding the way that they process information and using that way to support them around these different types of losses. So excellent point.
Beautiful. Yeah. And I can't believe this, but we are out of time. I still have hundreds of questions to ask you. But okay, so give us that website again.
Yes.
The website.
Give us
you know where
website.
To find us.
So thank you so much for having us on your show.
Yes.
Thank you so
tell
much.
Us the website again.
The website is ihaveaquestionbook.com. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You can find all those things on our website as well. And we're really accessible. We respond to every question we get, every, Facebook post or email. So your listeners should really feel free to reach out to us.
And I want to thank you personally, because I think what you're doing is so beautiful. Yes. And so helpful. And really, I hope you keep going, because I think this is just such a wonderful project and gift to
thank you
parents.
so much.
Yeah.
It means so much to us.
Absolutely. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Wow.
You're welcome.
That was just so amazing.
That was so cool,
yeah,
right?
So
yeah.
Cool. So next week, we have Daniel Keating, yes. who wrote the book Born Anxious. Well, that's me.
Yes. How about you? I was just thinking, well, it's so funny. One time, one of my therapists said to me that there is a gene
yeah.
that kind of makes you more anxious. And I'm like, yep, got it.
Got it. Got it. Yep.
It's in my blood.
Absolutely.
But yeah. you know what's interesting, and I'll probably talk about this too, is I've been taking folate.
Okay.
And that's been helping. And I think that my holistic doctor was saying that some people who have this gene, they're low on folate. So it's interesting. Yeah. So I'm not prescribing any medical advice, just sharing that what works for me. But just found it interesting. So
that's awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Did you get your confirmation on your license yet?
It's done, baby. Got it yesterday. I got the actual handheld one yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's
That's
official.
A wonderful note to end on.
Oh,
all right.
Thank you so much. We'll see
Have
you guys next week.
Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.